And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West and the most haunted city in the country. Well, it seems that another day has come and gone. It is January 27th. 27th day of this new year. Only 338 days remain until the year is over with. Let's see if we survive it in one piece. On this day in history, in the year 98, Trajan succeeds his adoptive father Nerva as Roman Emperor. As the Roman Emperor, he extends the Roman Empire to its maximum extent. In 1186, Henry VI, son and heir of the Holy Roman Emperor Frederick I, marries Constance of Sicily. 1302, Dante Alighieri is exiled from Florence. 1343, Pope Clement VI issues the papal bull, Unigenitus, to justify the power of the Pope and the use of indulgences. 200 years later, Martin Luther would protest this. Basically, the Pope said he can do what he wants to do because he's the Pope. And indulgences is a way to reduce the amount of punishment one has to undergo for their sins. The Catechism of the Catholic Church describes an indulgence as a remission before God of the temporal punishment due to sins whose guilt had already been forgiven. The recipient of an indulgence must perform an action to receive it, most often the saying once or some number of times of a specific prayer, or go to a particular place, or perform a specific good work. Well, this was created in the early church to, build a good following for the Pope. 1606, the Gunpowder Plot. The trial of Guy Fawkes and the other conspirators began, ending with their execution January 31st. The Gunpowder Plot was actually planned in the gatehouse of Ashby St. Ledger, which was a manor house in England that I came within an inch of obtaining. 1695, Mustafa II becomes the Ottoman Sultan, the Caliph of Islam in Istanbul on the death of Ahmed II. Mustafa rules until he abdicates in 1703. 1759, Spanish forces defeat indigenous Huilliches of southern Chile in the Battle of Rio Bueno. 1776, American Revolutionary War. Henry Knox's noble train of artillery arrives in Cambridge, Massachusetts. For those who are not familiar with Henry Knox, he was a military officer of the Continental Army, and later he served in the U.S. Army. He was also the first U.S. Secretary of War from 1789 to 1794. And born and raised in Boston, he actually owned and operated a bookstore, which gave him an interest in military history. And while there, he joined a local artillery company. Became George Washington's friend and became the chief artillery officer of the Continental Army. So he was with Washington on most of his campaigns. Let's see what else we have. Well, the Noble Train of Artillery, also known as the Knox Expedition, was an expedition led by Continental Army Colonel Henry Knox to transport heavy weapons that had been captured at Fort Ticonderoga. He brought them to the Continental Army camp outside of Boston during the winter of 1775-76. He moved 60 tons of cannon and other armament over the course of 3 winter months by boat, horse, ox-drawn sledges, and manpower. So I guess Washington looked at him favorably. In 1785, University of Georgia is founded, the first public university in the U.S. 1820, A Russian expedition led by Fabian Gottlieb von Bellinghausen and Mikhail Petrovich Lazarev discovered the Antarctic continent, approaching the Antarctic coast. 1825, Congress approves the Indian Territory in what's present-day Oklahoma. Clears the way for forced relocation of the Eastern Indians on the Trail of Tears. Basically, gold had been discovered on Indian land in Georgia, and they wanted it. 1868, Boshin War, Battle of Toba Fushimi begins between forces of the Tokugawa Shogunate and the pro-imperial factions. End in a defeat for the Shogunate is a pivotal point in the Meiji Restoration. Okay, and then in 1869, in the Boshin War, the Tokugawa rebels established the Izo Republic in Hokkaido. 1880, Thomas Edison gets a patent for his incandescent lamp. 1916, World War I. British government passed a legislation to introduce conscription in the UK. That's another word for the draft. 1918, beginning of the Finnish Civil War. 1927, Ibn Saud takes the title of King of Najd. 1939, first flight of the Lockheed P-38 Lightning. 1943, World War II. The 8th Air Force sorties 91 B-17s and B-24s to attack the U-boat construction yards at Wilhelmshaven in Germany. That was the first American bombing attack on Germany. Wouldn't be the last, though. 1944, the 900-day siege of Leningrad is lifted as the Germans are forced to withdraw. 1945, the Soviet 322nd Rifle Division liberates the remaining inmates of Auschwitz-Birkenau. 1951, nuclear testing at the Nevada test site begins with Operation Ranger. 1961, the Soviet submarine S-80 sinks when its snorkel malfunctions and floods the boat. 1965, South Vietnamese Prime Minister Tran Van Hoang is removed from the military junta of Nguyen Khan. 1967, Apollo program. Astronauts Gus Grissom, Ed White, and Roger Chaffee are killed in a fire that broke out during a test of their Apollo 1 spacecraft at the Kennedy Space Center. 1967, during the Cold War, the Soviet Union, the U.S., and the U.K. signed the Outer Space Treaty in Washington, D.C., banning deployment of nuclear weapons in space, and it limited the use of the moon and other celestial bodies to peaceful purposes. Of course, that was immediately violated. 1973, the Paris Peace Accords officially end the Vietnam War. Colonel William Nolde is killed in action, becoming the conflict's last recorded American combat casualty. 1980, through cooperation between the U.S. and Canadian government, six American diplomats secretly escape hostilities in Iran and the culmination of what's known as the Canadian Caper. Now, for those that have never heard of it, and I hadn't until I started researching this, it was a joint covert rescue by the Canadian government and the CIA. There'd been six diplomats who evaded capture during the seizure of the embassy in Tehran. Islamist students took most of the American embassy personnel hostage, demanded a return of the U.S.-backed Shah. They wanted to try him, or hang him, or both. After the diplomats had been sheltered by the British mission and the Canadian diplomatic personnel, Canada and the UK and U.S. government worked on a strategy to gain their escape through trickery and the use of Canadian passports. Caper involved a CIA officer named Tony Mendez and his colleague, who was only known as Julio. They joined the six diplomats in Tehran to form a fake film crew. It was purportedly made up of six Canadians, one Irishman, and one Latin American, who were finishing scouting for an appropriate location to shoot a scene for the nominal science fiction film Argo. On the morning of Sunday, January 27, 1980, the eight-person party went through passport control at the Mehrabad Airport in Tehran, boarded a Swiss Air flight to Zurich, and escaped. I actually saw the movie version of that. Wasn't bad. Okay, let's see what else we got. 1983, the pilot shaft of the Seakin Tunnel, the world's longest subaqueous tunnel, 53.85 kilometers between the Japanese islands of Honshu and Hokkaido, breaks through. 1996, a military coup. Colonel Ibrahim Bari Mayanasara deposes the first democratically elected president of Niger, Mahamani Usman. 1996, Germany first observes the International Holocaust Remembrance Day. 2002, an explosion at a military storage facility in Lagos, Nigeria, kills at least 1,100 and displaces over 20,000 others. 2003, the first selections for the National Recording Registry are announced by the Library of Congress. 2010, the 2009 Honduran constitutional crisis ends when Porfirio Lobo Sosa becomes the new president of Honduras. 2011, the Arab Spring, the Yemeni revolution begins as over 16,000 protesters demonstrate in Sana'a. And 2013, 242 people died in a nightclub fire in the Brazilian city of Santa Maria, Rio Grande do Sul. A lot of births and deaths on this date in history. All the days and observances. Christian Feats Day, Angela Merici, Blessed Paul Joseph Nardini, Devota in Monaco, Enrique de Oso y Cicero, John Chrysostom, translation of relics, Anglican, Lutheran, Eastern Orthodox, Sava in Serbia, day of the lifting of the siege of Leningrad in Russia, liberation of the Romanian inmates of Auschwitz and related observances. In the UK, it's Holocaust Memorial Day. Internationally, it's Holocaust Remembrance Day. In Italy, it's Memorial Day. And there are other Holocaust Memorial Days that are observed in various countries around the world. Let's see what else we got. Well, all right, in 661, the fourth caliph of the Rashidun Caliphate, Ali ibn Abu Talib, is struck on the head while praying at the great mosque of Kufa in Mesopotamia by a poison-coated sword. This act was carried out by Ibn Mujam Karahite. The caliph dies 2 days later. 672, Saint Vitalian ends his reign as Catholic Pope. 847, Sergius II ends his reign as Catholic Pope. 1142, the wrongful execution of noted Song Dynasty general Ye Fei. 1302, Dante becomes a Florentine political exile. 1538, the States of Gelderland accepts Wilhelm von Kleef as viceroy. 1556, Wilhelm of Orange becomes a Knight of the Order of the Golden Fleece. 1591, Scottish schoolmaster Dr. John Fionn burned for witchcraft at Castle Hill. This is ordered by the King of Great Britain, James VI, part of the Berwick witch trials. I've known a number of my teachers I'd love to have seen burn at the stake. The Vatican opens a 7-year trial against scholar Giordano Bruno. 1662, the first American lime kiln begins operation in Providence, Rhode Island. 1671, pirate Henry Morgan lands at the gates of Panama City, Panama. Been there. I've seen the cannons he threw off into the ocean. In fact, I've stood on them. 1710, Tsar Peter the Great sets the first Russian state budget. 1823, President Monroe appoints the first U.S. ambassadors to South America. 1864, the Battle of Fair Gardens in Tennessee. Also in 1864, there was a skirmish at Kelly's Ford in Virginia. 1870, the first sorority, Kappa Alpha Theta. It was created at DePaul University in Greencastle, Indiana. 1870, after accepting the 15th Amendment, Virginia is readmitted to the Union. 1870, Manitoba and Northwest Territories in Canada are incorporated. 1888, the National Geographic Society is founded in Washington, D.C. for the increase and diffusion of geographic knowledge. And all those topless native pictures have that sent schoolboys running to their rooms as soon as they came in. 1891, mine explosion kills 109 at Mount Pleasant, Pennsylvania. 1894, the Midwinter Fair opens in Golden Gate Park. 1897, the British troops occupy Bitter Gold Coast in Ghana. 1900, foreign diplomats stationed in Peking, China, wrote formal notes of protest demanding the Chinese government stop the Boxers and the other groups leading attacks on Westerners and Christians. They were actually being urged by the Empress. 1908, Pasiphae, a satellite of Jupiter, discovered by Malote. 1915, U.S. Marines occupy Haiti. 1918, Tarzan of the Apes, the very first Tarzan film, premieres at Broadway Theater in New York City. 1924, Lenin is placed in a mausoleum in Red Square in Moscow. He's treated as a god, don't you know? 1926, physicist Erwin Schrödinger publishes his theory of wave mechanics, presents what become known as the Schrödinger equation in quantum mechanics. He got a Nobel Prize for that. 1940, it was minus 17 degrees Fahrenheit at the CCC work camp in Georgia. That was Camp F-16. 1941, the Peruvian ambassador, Ricardo Rivera Schreiber, warns American ambassador about the Japanese attacking Pearl Harbor. Nobody listened. The siege of Leningrad, which was lifted in 1944 on this date, had gone on for 880 days and more than 2 million Russians died. 1948, the first tape recorder sold. Yeah, let's see. There's got to be something else of interest. 1964, Margaret Chase Smith, a senator, a Republican senator from Maine, tried out for the Republican presidential bid. In 1968, the French submarine Minerva disappears in the Mediterranean. 52 crew members vanish. 1969, 14 spies are hung in Baghdad. Alrighty, I think that's got our history for today. We've been talking about Haunted Antebellum. We're going to continue to talk about that. Antebellum means prior to the Civil War. In Springfield, Kentucky, we've got a place called Mabel Hill Manor. And this location just might be the perfect haunted getaway. It's got a bed and breakfast, a craft store, a llama farm on the site, and a few alpacas thrown in for good measure. So there's plenty to see and plenty to do. What's even better is the fact the owners are quite open concerning the ghosts that occupy the place. And Maple Hill Manor is one of the favorite spots for local ghost hunters. Now, the ghost of the activity is said to actually stem from two events. The original owners of the home, Thomas McElroy and family, built the place in 1851. And while they lived there, four of their children died in the house at relatively young ages. It's believed these young spirits are the source for a lot of the paranormal activity that takes place. The other key event in the history of the house is the Battle of Perryville. Prior to the battle, the Confederate Army camped on the grounds of the house, and after the conclusion of the affair, the Union Army used the house as a hospital to take care of the wounded and the dying. And many soldiers did die while being treated in the house. Between these two events, there's the very real possibility of souls wandering around Maple Hill Manor. And those who've had an experience say there are cold spots in the house. They hear disembodied voices. They hear bizarre knocks on the walls and doors and occasionally catch a whiff of perfume. Might be an interesting place to spend the weekend. Boonesboro, Maryland, the Old South Mountain Inn. Now, the old inn is perched alongside Turner's Gap, and it's a perfect launching point for exploring Antietam Battlefield and other historic sites in the area. Outside, the inn dates back to 1730s. It serviced travelers as a stagecoach stop and a wagon stand for a lot of years. And during the Civil War, this location we'll see two important events take place. The first occurred when John Brown used the inn to stage his raid on the nearby town of Harper's Ferry. The second was when Confederate General D.H. Hill used the inn as his headquarters just prior to the Battle of Antietam. Now, important events still occur at the Old South Mountain Inn today, but they're generally of a happy and festive nature. With a top-notch restaurant, a killer wine list, and an awesome view of the surrounding countryside, this eatery is quite popular with tourists. And the ghost of Madeline Vinton Dahlgren is the attraction that draws the ghost enthusiast. She was a former resident of the inn in the late 1800s, was credited with perhaps saving the structure from disaster. When a fire broke out in the restaurant in 2002, a door was mysteriously opened and allowed the staff to be alerted to the fire. Nobody knows who opened the door. In fact, the door was supposed to be locked. She said to still be around today and has been witnessed by the staff on a number of occasions. Then in Frederick, Maryland is the Barbara Fritchie House and Museum. And everything about this location is actually quite interesting. First, there's the house. It's actually a replica of the original building that stood there during the American Civil War. And then there's the individual, Barbara Fritchie. Said she was strongly in favor of preserving the Union of the U.S. that when the Confederate Army under Major General Jackson came through the town of Frederick, she accosted him by waving the Union flag. According to the story, she was approached by General Jackson, but she didn't back up. She's supposed to have said, "Shoot if you must, this old gray head, but spare your country's flag." Now, a poem was written about this by John Greenleaf Whittier, and it was entitled Barbara Frietchie. And when her home was deemed destitute, it was replaced with a replica that's open to the public today. So if you stop by and check it out, you just might see Barbara herself, or the ghost of Barbara anyway. Visitors to the museum reported seeing her apparition, hearing her voice, and seeing a rocking chair move all by itself. It's an interesting side tale from the Civil War, and it's a very unique haunting. And in Hollywood, Maryland, we have Soderly Plantation. Now, it's always nice when a historic location embraces its haunted history. At Soderly Plantation, they even go the extra mile by offering a Ghost of Soderly experience. You'll have to visit the house in the month of October, though, if you want to participate in that particular event. It's also a great time to visit this property, which is dates back to about 1703. If you count the original two-room house. Originally built by James Bowles, but more associated with the second male owner, George Plowder III. He's the one that named the place Soderly after his ancestral home in England. At the time of the Civil War, Dr. Walter Hanson Stone Briscoe was running the estate, along with much of his family, and about 50 slaves. Three of the young men there, all Briscoe's sons, signed up to fight for the Confederacy. But when the state of Maryland emancipated the slaves in 1864, the plantation fell on hard times. Thankfully, that's really not the case today. With so much to see and do at this historic site, the plantation is thriving. But to turn our attention back to the ghost, the most well-known spirit on the property would have to be that of George Plowder III. Said he likes to hang out on the second floor of the property. And he'll let visitors know he's there by tugging on their clothes or touching them, and sometimes he'll whisper in their ear. Additional ghosts are said to walk the area around the old slave quarters. People have heard music playing and seen shadowy apparitions in that area. If that's not enough, there seems to be a motherly ghost that lingers in the main kitchen. Some have heard it smell the scent of food cooking when none of the ovens are on, and heard a female voice. And in Towson, Maryland, is Hampton House. More formally known these days as the Hampton National Historic Site, this Georgian-style mansion dates to 1790, and it's associated with a man named Colonel Charles Ridgely. When it was built, it was the largest private home in the country, and it serviced the Ridgely family through the Revolutionary War. It was a rather prosperous time for them since they owned an ironworks, which, of course, brought in a great deal of money. And when the Civil War rolled around, Charles Ridgely created the pro-Confederate Baltimore County Horse Guards. They functioned as a sort of state guard unit until the end of the war. At that point, the state of Maryland eliminated slavery in 1864, and the Grand Tobacco estate of the Ridgely family began to fail. Operated by the National Park Service, the Hampton House is part of a massive national site that includes the original house, the slave quarters, the dairy, the barn, the granary. You can tour the entire complex, which you might want to skip asking about the ghost. The employees don't officially talk about them. Before the house became a national site, though, the previous owners of the place, which was Preservation Maryland, talked about them in great detail, even offered ghost tours. Seems to be quite the collection of spirits on the site, so you might want to pay close attention if you do take the tour. The two main ghosts seem to be the spirits of young women named Priscilla Ridgely and Signet Swan. Priscilla's been seen and heard throughout the house, but Signet is said to stay in her own bedroom where she's been seen, and the sound of a harpsichord playing has been heard. A third apparition out of a butler named Tom has been witnessed at various times on the lower floor. And in addition to all this, there's a plethora of activity at the Hampton House. Disembodied voices, doors opening and closing by themselves, and heavy footsteps have been heard on the stairs in the hallway. And if you're making a list of ghostly activity, these would be at the very top of that list. From there, let's go to Urbana, Maryland. The Landon House. Also known as the Stankyoff House. This historic home is constantly recognizable due to its unique clerestory roof, double full-length porches, and Greek Revival interior. Originally built in 1754 in Virginia, but was relocated here in 1846 and expanded. Over the years, this property has been used in a number of ways. It was a seminary, a military institute, and of course, it was a family home. When the Civil War started, it was known as the Landon Female Academy, but it was abandoned because of the fighting in the area. General Jeb Stuart actually hosted an impromptu ball at the school on September 8, 1862, and the Union troops, just a week or so later, used it as a place to get a little R&R. These days, the Landon House is known for special events and gatherings, specifically weddings. They also host the occasional ghost tour and haunted mansion type of event close to Halloween. It's only slightly ironic that this is the period when people seem to notice the spiritual activity at the place as well. Most of it seems to be residual in nature at sights and sounds stemming from two specific events in the house. When the Sabres and Roses Ball was held by General Stuart in the short period that the house was used as a field hospital during the Civil War, apparently energy was left over from these. The ghostly activity includes disembodied voices, glimpses of misty figures. Sometimes they appear as people attending the ball, and the sounds that are associated with most hauntings are footsteps, knocks, bangs, and etc. And of course, let's not forget the smells. Well, in Waldorf, Maryland, we have the Dr. Mudd House Museum. Of all the horrific events associated with the American Civil War, or at least the time period immediately following the war, the assassination of Abraham Lincoln may be the most notorious. John Wilkes Booth, an actor from Maryland, plotted with others to kill President Lincoln. Vice President Johnson and Secretary of State Seward. On the night of the attack, Johnson was actually spared. Seward was wounded. Only Booth managed to carry out the plan correctly, shooting Lincoln in the back of the head at Ford's Theater. His security guard had gone for a drink at the local tavern. Immediately following the attack, Booth fled the scene of the crime. He vaulted over the rail and fell and dropped down to the stage, broke his leg, and was said to have later been killed while hiding in a barn in Virginia. Well, there's a lot of evidence that, in fact, it wasn't Booth that was killed in the barn. He's supposed to have actually died a number of years later. Eight conspirators were actually tried and all were found guilty. In those days, accusation equals guilt, pretty much like today, and four were hung for their crimes. Dr. Samuel Mudd was one of these conspirators, and he was sentenced to life in prison for his help with the assassination. So what help did he provide, you might ask? The night of the killing, Booth, along with another conspirator named Harold, visited Dr. Mudd to get treatment for a broken leg that Booth suffered during the attack. Remember I said he vaulted over the railing of the box and dropped to the stage? He would have landed okay, but his spur caught on the American flag hanging on the front of the box, and it put him off balance. So he ran along and broke his leg. Well, Dr. Mudd fixed his leg, got him a set of crutches, and gave the two men shelter for the night. It also appears, though it was never formally confirmed, that Mudd was a key contact when Booth was planning the attacks. The Dr. Mudd House Museum is now actually a living museum. They offer tours and host events and generally offer a fun and educational experience to all who visit. The paranormal activity in the house is tame enough that you shouldn't feel frightened during your visit. It's said that a ghost likes to hang out in the bedroom while John Wilkes Booth spent the night. Staff often finds the bed messed up when they return to open in the morning, even though the house was empty the night before. And nobody's sure who the ghost might be. Some think it's Booth, some think it's someone from the Mudd family. But he or she often gets blamed for things that go missing and the odd sounds that seem to occur in that house. In Ellisville, Mississippi, we got the Deason House. Well, the story of this old farmhouse is forever entangled with the story of a man named Newt Knight and his attempt to create a free state of Jones during the Civil War. Amos Deason built the house in 1845 and found himself in a strange predicament when Major Amos McLemore arrived on his doorstep. The Confederate officer was there to hunt down a band of deserters that was led by Knight. When Newt found out that he was staying in the Deason house, he made a preemptive strike. He stormed the house and shot McLemore dead as he was warming by the fire. And if that murder wasn't enough to make the place haunted, consider that the house was used for surgery on soldiers wounded while fighting in Mississippi. The house is now owned by the Daughters of the American Revolution, so you can arrange a tour or attend one of the yearly events that are being held there. And if you mention you're looking for ghosts, well, you're going to get an earful. Everybody there has been in that house has had an experience. Misty apparitions are often seen. Disembodied voices are heard, especially gasps and whispers that sound like they're right in your ear. And there's no rocking chair that seems to be favored by one of the ghosts that hangs out there. Some say the ghost of Newt's in the house, but odds are that the spirits are the family members who died while living there or soldiers who died during surgery. Of course, it is possible that the ghost of Newt might hang around. Then in Vicksburg, Mississippi, we got the Cedar Grove Mansion Inn and Restaurant. You can certainly get a fine meal at this location, but you might spend the night in one of their rooms if you can. John Alexander Klein finished building Cedar Grove in 1852 for his young bride, Elizabeth, and they moved in right after that. When the siege of Vicksburg began in 1863, the house was struck by cannon fire. In fact, there's still a cannonball lodged in the side of the house today. But the house did survive the battle. What wouldn't survive was the Klein family's reputation. It became well known that Elizabeth was actually a relative of Union General, General William T. Sherman, who was not a popular guy in the South. Now, Cedar Grove is a top-notch tourist destination for people traveling Highway 61, as well as those that visit the city of Vicksburg. As for the ghost stories associated with the place, well, there's a number of them. It seems the entire Klein family has stuck around. During their tenure at the mansion, there were several bouts of bad luck. One of their sons accidentally killed himself while cleaning a gun. Now, it would seem to me that anybody with half a brain would check a gun and make sure it's not loaded before you clean it. But then again, it does save time to leave it loaded while you clean it. And three different children died of natural causes, disease, illness, etc., in the house. It said that one or more of them were responsible for the sounds of children laughing that are heard in the house. And when things go missing, it's the children that get blamed. The spirit of Elizabeth's been seen going up and down the staircase, and even John is thought to haunt the place. He says you can smell the scent of his pipe when he's wandering around. Also in Vicksburg, Mississippi, we have the Duff Green Mansion. Shortly after the Duff Green married Mary Lake, he built her this awesome house in 1856. They were quite the socialites, and of course, often threw galas there. When the Civil War made its way to Vicksburg, this all ended, of course. During the period in 1863, when General Grant held the city under siege, Duff Green Mansion was used as a hospital. Duff made the arrangement to spare the place from the almost constant barrage of artillery that was hitting Vicksburg. Surgery took place in the basement. The main floor was for recovering Confederate troops, and the top floor was reserved for Federal soldiers who were wounded. Meanwhile, Mary gave birth to a baby boy in a nearby cave. She named him William Siege Green. Duff Green Mansion is the stylish bed and breakfast today. It's well known for its ghost stories, as it is for plush rooms and top-notch service. Spirit of Mary Green's been seen quite a few times throughout the mansion. She's said to appear with her blonde hair pulled back, wearing a green dress. And if you feel like staying in a room that's known for the occasional ghostly appearance, you might consider staying in the Dixie Room, said to be the residence of a one-legged Confederate soldier. Or, I guess I should say his spirit. Anyway, people see him sitting in a chair that's in the room. If you wake up in the middle of the night and there's a one-legged man sitting in a chair staring at you, well, just ignore him and go back to sleep. Vicksburg, Mississippi, McRaven House. Now, this particular house was built in several sections, with the first and the oldest dating back to 1797. And it was built by a man named Andrew Glass. He used the property as a way station of sorts for people traveling the Natchez Trace. Sheriff Stephen Howard bought the house from him in 1836 and added on to the property, but while there, he had a personal blow, the death of his young bride, Mary Elizabeth, during childbirth. So in 1849, he sold the property to John Bob. During the Civil War, when the Siege of Vicksburg was going on, Bob decided to offer his house for use as a hospital for wounded Confederate soldiers. Now, normally this would spare a house from attack, but due to the close proximity of the railroad, which was used for supplies, the estate was hit by fire a number of times. Now, the place is known as the McRaven House. It was named after the street it's located on, although the street has changed its name as well. It's a southern mecca for ghost hunters. It offers ghost tours, paranormal investigations, and the gift shop. This is one of the most accessible Civil War-era homes to a ghost enthusiast. It's known for three different ghosts, though there's plenty of side activity going on there as well. First, the spirit of Mary Elizabeth Howard's been seen in the bedroom where she died. John Bob's ghost seems to like the balcony in the second floor of the house, and Andrew Glass is said to be in the bedroom now named after him. And there's a number of eyewitness accounts online concerning experiences at the McRaven House. So if you plan to visit to Vicksburg, I recommend doing it. Been there a couple of times. It's a very nice place to go. Then in Carthage, Mississippi, we have Kendrick Place. This living museum dates back to 1849 and a blacksmith named William Kendrick. When it was first built, the locals called the place a mansion because it was the first house to have glass windows. One of the few structures in the area to survive the Civil War, and this was due to the fact it was used as a hospital by both sides. When the fighting was over, the house continued to help the town of Carthage by functioning as a sick house and temporary courthouse. Kendrick Place is now a living museum that you can visit and tour and learn more about the struggle between the North and the South in Missouri. I said it was Carthage, Mississippi. It's Carthage, Missouri. The history of the house is a military hospital and all the death and pain that comes with that. You might think the place is haunted by those who died there while being treated. But that doesn't seem to be the case. The house is actually associated with a local legend that states a young female slave was hung near the house. Now, the records don't say why she was hung. Some say she attempted to escape. Others say she was caught shirking her duties. But people have been seeing and hearing her ghost for decades. Alrighty. Then we go to Kearney, Missouri, the Jesse James Farm. Now, Jesse James, the legendary outlaw, really doesn't need any introduction. His infamous doings with the James Younger Gang are well known. What's less well known is his participation in the American Civil War. Jesse and his brother Frank were both known as bushwhackers. This term was used to identify pro-Confederate guerrillas who operated in Missouri and Kansas. They basically harassed Union troops throughout the region. And he participated in an ugly incident that's now known as the Centralia Massacre. Now, this affair was supposed to have been actually carried out by William Bloody Bill Anderson. It involved 24 Union soldiers being summarily executed after being captured. As for the farm itself, Jesse was born there in 1847, and after he was allegedly killed by Robert Ford, April 3rd, 1882. He was buried there in the yard. They later dug him up and supposedly moved him. There is talk about the fact that he was actually involved with the Knights of the Golden Circle, and they arranged for him to fake his death so he could move. If you want to know more about his shooting by Robert Ford, who was the youngest member of his gang, visit the friends at the James Farm and take a tour. Now, ghostly activity seems to happen both inside and outside the house, so a tour is the best bet to get into all those areas. Inside activity seems to stem around the violence that occurred on the farm. Jesse's half-brother Archie was killed by Pinkerton agents at the farmhouse. His mother Zerelda had her hand shot off. People say bizarre lights appear in the house that seem to float about room to room, and outside the house, the residual effects of guerrilla warfare are evident. There have been sightings of spectral soldiers and the sounds of battles raging throughout the property. Then in Lexington, Missouri, we have the Oliver Anderson House. Now, the Oliver Anderson House was part of the Battle of Lexington State Historic Site. And the history of the house is closely tied to that battle. It began when General Sterling Price arrived in the city of Lexington. He encountered federal troops under the command of Colonel James Mulligan. Mulligan's Irish Brigade from Illinois quickly took the defensive in the campaign, but a constant exchange of artillery eventually took its toll on the Northern soldiers. With a final rush, Price managed to overtake the Union element and force their surrender. It's one of the few Confederate victories during Price's march across Missouri. As for the Oliver Anderson House, it was used throughout the battle as a Union field hospital. During the heaviest part of the fighting, Confederates actually assaulted the hospital, which actually was a violation of the laws of war, and took it briefly till federal troops forced them to give it back to them once again. A visit to the house today is a living testament to all this. There are bullet holes and other forms of war damage throughout the house. Nice collection of antique furniture to see and a lovely tour that you can take. Maybe it's the authentic environment that fuels the residual hauntings that seem to happen at the house. Visitors to the park are reported seeing phantom soldiers in battle. They hear the sounds of gunfire and cannons, and they experience the unusual sensation of never being alone. Then in Sullivan, Missouri, is the Harney Mansion. William Selby Harney was a brevet major general in the U.S. Army who served in the Mexican-American War and Indian War. When Civil War began, General Harney, was the commander of Jefferson Barracks in St. Louis. But after the Camp Jackson affair and a series of bad negotiations with Confederate General Sterling Price, he was replaced by Captain Nathaniel Lyon. Harney made his way to Washington, D.C. to discuss these matters with his superiors, but was captured by Confederates en route. Harney wouldn't agree to serve with the Confederacy, and because his birth state was Tennessee, he was allowed to continue on to Washington. The Harney Mansion was the home of this famous general, built 1872 after he retired permanently from the Army. It's currently managed by a nonprofit, but can be visited by arrangement through the Sullivan Chamber of Commerce. And it's because of this that the mansion is now one of the most popular ghost hunting spots in Missouri. Many investigative groups and thrill seekers as well have rented the mansion for overnight stays. And while it's a bit murky about who haunts the mansion, some believe that it's the general, others think it's family members. Most who visited the house have left with an experience or two to write up and talk about. Shadowy figures have been seen scooting along walls. Disembodied voices have been heard. And the usual collection of ghostly sounds, such as footsteps, bangs, knocks, etc., are quite common. Then in Asheville, North Carolina, we have the Smith McDowell House Museum. Now, this house is the oldest house in the city of Asheville, and since it was quite large for its day, it was also considered the first mansion to be built there. It was built in the 1840s for James McConnell Smith and remained in his family until after the Civil War. After the onset of the war, the residents of William Wallace McDowell and Sarah Lucinda Smith McDowell, Smith would actually organize a group of volunteer Confederates called the Buncombe Riflemen and rise to the rank of major during the war. His house, though, at one point would be usurped by Union soldiers for a period of time. If you make a visit to Asheville, and quite frankly you should, you have to make it a point to come by the house. It's an awesome site with four floors in the house, two rows of exterior porches, and a unique federal rook. Look, it's an architectural marvel. It's located these days on the Asheville-Buncombe Technical Community College campus, and tours are offered. Just be sure to ask your tour guide to tell you about their resident ghost. Mansion seems to be somewhere between one and seems to have somewhere between one and six of them, depending on the source. Local press, local legend, or ghost hunters, you may get one or more of these stories. Two small girls haunt the house. They're named Carrie and Sarah. There's an evil spirit that walks the grounds outside called the Dark One. And the spirit of a slave master is present and angry all the time. And there's several former family members who've seen and heard and been heard in various spots. So enjoy your tour. Then in Fayetteville, North Carolina, there's the Sanford House. The Heritage Square is an area in town. It's owned by the Women's Club of Fayetteville. It includes the Baker Hay Nimmucks House, built about 1804, and the Oval Ballroom, built in 1818, and the Sanford House that dates back to 1797. Built for Duncan McLaren, the Sanford House was a vital part of the community when the Civil War occurred. Legend states that General Sherman temporarily used the house as barracks when the Union Army occupied the city of Fayetteville, but there's been no historical authentication of this. One thing is certain, though, that the house it was used extensively for social events by the families that lived there over the years. Now, the Women's Club rents out the house, as well as the grounds, for weddings and other shindigs. Most come because they want to use the ornate and beautiful grand staircase in the house for their wedding photos. It should be noted this same staircase is also of interest to the ghost hunting crowd as well. Said that the apparition of a woman has been seen ascending and descending the staircase on a number of occasions. Those who've seen her say she disappears when she reaches the opposite end of the stairs. Other than this, there doesn't seem to be any other activity that could be attributed to a ghost, but it does make for a nice, calm visit. Then in Four Oaks, North Carolina, we have the Harper House. Harper House is part of the Bentonville Battlefield, located near the Bentonville Battlefield Museum. Once belonged to John and Amy Harper and was finished sometime in the 1850s. When the Battle of Bentonville occurred, the Union Army quickly occupied the house and turned it into a field hospital. It said that over 500 people were treated at the house, with family members pitching in and helping out the military doctors. Many who died in the battle were buried nearby, with more than 350 Confederates buried in one mass grave. That's now commemorated with a monument dedicated by the Goldsboro Rifles in 1893. Since the house is now part of the Bentonville Battlefield Historic Site, it's periodically open for tours. The spirit of John Harper said to still be in the house and is often seen peering from the windows. At night, employees say the house often light up as if somebody inside is lighting a candle or a lamp, and strange sounds will be heard. Sometimes they sound like the moans and groans coming from the hospital that was once located there. So if you do come, take your time exploring the battlefield and all its attractions, such as the Harper House. Well, it's interesting. Everybody and their dog, though something to sell, tries to call me. All righty. In New Bern, North Carolina, the Atmore Oliver House. Samuel Chapman built this house sometime around 1790. After he retired from the Continental Army, he moved permanently to New Bern to work for the Craven County Supreme Court. And after he passed away in 1807, his daughter moved in. Like most historic homes in the area, the Atmore Oliver House, its residents were affected by the Battle of New Bern. Well, battles, actually. Battles occurred in the city in 1862 and again in 1864. Well, the Atmore Oliver House is now the headquarters of the New Bern Historical Society. They do have exhibitions in the house and offer tours to the public during the week. The first floor has artifacts and displays about the Battle of New Bern, and the staff will be more than happy to tell you all about that battle. What's even more interesting, though, is the artifacts may be the cause of the haunting in this place as well. Seen members of the society, as well as guests who visited, have experienced poltergeist activity in the house. Objects moving around, bangs and knocks. Some say this is a product of ghosts, maybe members of the Chapman family, and some say the activity stems from the negative energy contained in the Civil War items. Either way, a visit to this mansion along with a trip to the New Bern Battlefield Park should satisfy your curiosity. Also in New Bern, North Carolina, is the Harvey Mansion. Known for its renowned restaurant, the Harvey Mansion dates to 1804 and local shipowner John Harvey. Having immigrated from England to the small seaport village of New Bern, John used the house as a base of operations for his seafaring until he died. During the Civil War, the house still belonged to the Harvey family while the city of New Bern was occupied by Union troops, and the mansion was used as the military provost headquarters. Once the war ended, the house functioned as a dormitory and apartment building, and it even served as a local university known as the Craven Community College. Now that's a local eatery known for its eclectic mix of pub fare and home cooking. It's a bonus, really, that you might also have to an experience relating to ghosts while you visit the place. It's said there are actually two spirits in residence. Spirit of a young woman who walks through the dining room at odd times. What's even more odd, she walks through the walls. And a young boy that's known for playfully tugging on visitors' clothing and giggling. And you might consider it a paranormal dessert after your meal to interact with these two spirits. Then in Pollocksville, North Carolina, we have the Foscue Plantation. Now, Simon Foscue Jr. built this house in 1824 on the Trent River. His family prospered in the first half of the century, and as was the case with a lot of families in the South, their fortunes were damaged with the end of the Civil War. Best way to learn just how difficult the times were for families back then is to take the tour. Tour guides not only show you some fine examples of high-style antebellum antiques, but you hear about the difficulties the Foscue family endured with Reconstruction, recovering from the loss of the slave labor and living in an economy that was in complete and total shambles. Interestingly, the tales of ghosts on this property have been around for almost as long as the house itself, said to be haunted by the spirits of the slaves who lived and died on the property. Now, while history shines a pretty positive light on the Foscue family and their history, legend states that Simon was a harsh taskmaster and executed harsh punishments on the slaves when he thought they were not pulling their weight. Because of this, these miserable spirits still active in the house today. Moans and groans are heard in the attic, where slaves were reportedly held in a dungeon-like manner for punishment. Footsteps and bangs are heard in various rooms, and the atmosphere of the place, after dark anyway, seems particularly heavy at times. Then in also in Weaverville, North Carolina, is the Vance birthplace. Zebulon Baird Vance was an officer for the Confederacy during the American Civil War. He was elected governor twice. His birthplace, which is located in the town of Weaverville, was reconstructed in modern times around the original home's chimney and made to resemble an authentic log house from the late 1700s. During the Civil War, he was promoted to the rank of colonel and led a unit known as the Rough and Ready Guards. Good Lord. He led these men in the battles of New Bern, Richmond, and Gettysburg. Once the war was over, Vance spent some time in a federal prison before being pardoned for his part in the war. Now, the Vance birthplace is a tribute to all things Zebulon, as well as a grand example of life during pioneer times. It's been recreated in such a historical manner that apparently several ghosts in that area decided to hang out there. It's not known if the activity is residual, meaning the ghosts ignore the living and are stuck in some sort of time loop, or whether it's an intelligent haunting, but visitors there claim to see multiple apparitions dressed in period clothing. Sometimes they appear to be doing their own thing, such as working on the farm. Sometimes they seem to be watching the tourists. One theory is that there are people who are buried in a historic cemetery down the road. Maybe they were just neighbors of the Vance family. Whatever may be the case, there's been a lot of witnesses to the fact that they're there. Well, once again, we've run out of time. We'll be back tomorrow, and once again, you'll be listening to Ken Hudnall and the Ken Hudnall Show. Until then, have a truly great evening.